You're listening to the Onside Podcast, the podcast for innovation-driven entrepreneurship here in Atlantic Canada. I'm your host, Alex McCann, and this is episode number 10. Our guest today is Saeed El-Darahali, the founder, president, and CEO of SimplyCast. Saeed was 8 years old when he discovered computers, and he decided at age 16 that he would become an internet entrepreneur. Today, as the president and CEO of SimplyCast, he is a leading provider of multi-channel automated marketing services. Saeed, I'm so thrilled that you could join us today, and welcome to our podcast.
Thanks, Alex. Pleasure for me to be here today, and just wonderful to see you in person.
That's right. Yes, we haven't had very many in-person podcast recordings because of COVID, but hopefully we are slowly coming out of COVID, and it's really nice to be with you here in person. So you and I had a chance to chat and get to know each other a little bit, but I thought maybe what we could do is open things up and have you tell us a little bit about yourself, because you have such an interesting background and you've done so much here in Nova Scotia and Atlantic Canada. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are?
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Saeed El-Darahali, president CEO of SimplyCast, you know, a company that's located in what I'd like to call Silicon Dartmouth. Pretty much wherever the location of SimplyCast, we like to call it the area of Silicon Dartmouth. And the nice thing about it that just recently happened, probably about a couple of years ago, is that we started receiving mail to our office with the Silicon Dartmouth on the address. So even Canada Post has adopted the model, and which is wonderful. So we haven't lost any mail because of it. I arrived here back in 92. I was only about 11 years old. I was born in Kuwait, and my parents decided that Canada is the place that we want to be. My father always wanted to go to the U.S. He's an engineer. My mother's a teacher. I have wonderful four sisters, and you know, when my father decided that North America is the place that he wanted to be, he decided that Canada would be the place, and we were very lucky to be accepted as immigrants in Nova Scotia. As you can imagine, when we arrived, we didn't speak a word of English. My parents didn't speak English. We struggled a lot, you know, as a family, as any immigrant family arriving in this wonderful land, and had to learn very quickly to, you know, support a family, being the oldest boy in the family, and decided to, you know, begin working very quickly, and worked in a lot of different areas. But computers has been my life since I was 8 years old. You know, it happened because my cousin had a 286 computer, and I just became very jealous of him having a machine, and decided that I wanted a similar machine. And then went into, you know, game programming and learned the general programming principles. Didn't know what I was doing, but I learned, you know, on my own, and then decided that, you know, my passion is going to be computers, not medicine or, you know, pharmacy or anything like that, because a lot of our families have gone into the medicine field.
Okay. So did you get your hands on a computer, or how did you know that you loved computers? Like, was there one just kind of laying about? Your cousin had one? How did you?
That's exactly right. So my cousin had a 286 computer, and, you know, the minute that he would leave his little den or office, I would sneak in and try to get into on the machine. He didn't really like me being on that machine. So eventually I cried pretty much every day to my father to buy me a machine. And those machines were very expensive back then. So he bought me like a Commodore type machine at the time, and basically started picking up books and programming and making games. And my dream was to become a game developer, which is, I think, what any, you know, young person thinks about as a profession. But from there, just, you know, learned a lot about computers. And eventually, when we came to Canada, I actually created my first internet account on Shebectonet, which is a free internet connectivity that's provided by Dalhousie University. And that gave me access to, you know, getting on the internet before the internet even became an internet in Halifax.
So that was a while ago. So that's, absolutely. That's good. That's good. And so you're a young new immigrant with your family living in Halifax. Is
correct.
It? Okay. And you're starting to get really into computers. But how did you start to develop a bit of a entrepreneurial bent? Was it something related to computers, or how did you start figuring out? You mentioned you wanted to help your family out and things like that. How did you kind of move that along and start going, you know, thinking about entrepreneurship?
Absolutely. So the first thing that I needed was cash. So I basically picked up a job at a local store on my street when I was about 12 years old. And then also picked up another job in a motel, believe it or not, and was working, you know, the night shift after school, trying to generate as much cash as I could. And when I did that, I decided to start up a small little, you know, a computer parts business. Mm. And there was a wholesaler back in the day that I would go and basically set up a relationship with, and started putting computers together for myself. I still have the full tower that I created back in those days, still in my in my storage, and I show it to the kids every once in a while. This is what a computer really looked like back in the day, mm-hmm. and I would take it apart and show them. And then from there, I decided that it was time for me to start an actual business that potentially has some growth potential. So made some money, you know, consulting, you know, putting computers together for my friends, gaming machines, copying, you know, Duke Nukem and Doom into uh-huh. another, and you know, doing all these small little things that a child is able to do, and I was able to make money, and everybody would come to me and say, hey Saeed, can you fix this, can you fix that, and so on and so forth. Then started you know, another business, which was a cotton candy business. It was a really, really nice business, you know, at 13-14 years old. Mm-hmm. Actually set up the business off of Caledonia in Dartmouth, and you know, within 6 months I had I think 150-160 stores across Nova Scotia.
Oh wow.
And I was kind of known as the Mr. Cotton Candy guy. Learned that you know, you're not able to drive until you're 16, so I had to actually set up another company where my father owned it, and he was the distribution arm of our company. And learned a lot about, you know, how to set up a business, a little bit of writing, you know, setting up a bank account, dealing with all the, you know, the accounting principles and so on at a very, very young age, even before going to school. Mm-hmm. You know, from there, you know, I decided, I think at the age 15, 16, that it was time for me to drop out of school, because, you know, the internet was starting to you know, become a commercial space, mm-hmm. For people to interact. And I saw a lot of opportunities, and I came up with a pretty crazy idea, that, didn't actually happen until 10 years after.
Oh, okay.
And the concept was, because I saw how difficult it was, because we didn't live in a rich neighborhood. A lot of people didn't have access to credit cards. You needed to have a credit score and things like that, including my parents, because they were new to this land. So I said, you know, what if I could create the world's first prepaid credit card? Mm. And I went to my parents and said, I'm dropping out of school. and they said, well, if you drop out of school, we're going to disown you.
Oh.
Because, you know, as a mother that's a teacher, and my father's an engineer, and the family is very much into the education, I was the only, you know, person in the family that, you know, even thought about business. Mm. Right? So business was something that's very bad in the mm-hmm. family. You know, mm-hmm. you should have a job. 9 to 5, focus very much on, you know, establishing a career, have credentials behind your name, and that's how you are known to be a good person mm-hmm. in the eyes of society, I guess, the mm-hmm. way that my parents have thought. And I said, I don't want to do that. I want to work in an area where I'm passionate about, where I'm inventing. The joke was with my parents is that, you know, in a computer, I can make a mistake and a bug is created, but nobody's harmed. Mm. But if I was a doctor and I made a major mistake, there's a life that potentially could be at risk. And I said, I'd rather be able to recompile a code and fix the bug and bring that, you know, feature back, rather than, you know, not having the ability that God would have, depending mm-hmm. on your faith, of bringing a human back to mm-hmm. life. Right?
So that is a very good point.
So I decided that computers is the place that I wanted to be.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. So your parents, you know, you're really into it. You're getting some business experience. You have this idea for a prepaid credit card. You want to pursue it. Your parents are kind of like, I think we want you to be a doctor, a lawyer, or something, you know, we understand and respectable. We don't really even know what this prepaid credit card thing is. And so they were like, well, maybe we don't want you to do that. So then what happened? What did you kind of do next?
So I continued to, you know, pursue the various ideas. I actually started a few other, you know, businesses. I also joined the Canadian Armed Forces at the age of 16.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So that was another thing that I did at that time. And, you know, basically what I wanted to do is have pretty much everything that a human would need to be able to operate in a company. It doesn't have to be a technology company. So I saw the military as a way to give back to the community, a way to give back to the country. And that's why I joined. I remember the story when I walked into the recruitment office and I said, I'd like to join the Armed Forces, and said, well, what is the reason that you'd like to join, Saeed? Can you give us a little bit of an insight into your thinking? And I said, well, you gave my family, my sisters and my parents, you know, a great land to, you know, live in. I'd like to give back to the country. And the officer said, that's a wonderful reason for you to be here. And then he handed me a pay sheet. Mm-hmm. And I said, excuse me, why? I don't want to get paid by the military. I want to just give some time for a year or two to support the armed forces and then come out. But he said, no, but you have to get paid. How are you going to eat? And I said, no, I'd like to keep that money. And he looked at me and he said, this guy is still a child. He didn't truly understand. And I said, look, I've got enough money. I've been, you know, working in business and, you know, I'd like to just get back to the community. And he said, well, we can't take you until you sign that you are going to get paid. And I said, wonderful. My mother didn't like that idea either, being the only boy in the family, as you can imagine. She said, well, you know, it's not compulsory for you to be in the armed forces, Saeed. Right? And mm-hmm. I said, well, I want to give back to the country. And I said, if I die for this country, I would have felt that I've given back. But that didn't happen, which Canada is a peaceful country, as you can imagine. We don't fight a lot of wars out there. So my mother was proud that I came home and I was still in one piece even after basic training. That was a great achievement. Where I stayed for about 5 years of my life in the armed forces, but I continued to pursue a lot of different businesses. Mm-hmm. So I've started probably 7 businesses, sold 6.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I have not sold the cotton candy machine, still at home.
Ah, okay.
And I said,
when my wife says,
well, why do we keep it? I said, that is my backup plan just in case.
Uh-huh. That's your retirement plan, you know, when you just want to sit on the beach and have something fun to do. You got your cotton candy machine.
Exactly.
Awesome. So you have this like entrepreneurial spirit that started at a really young age. You also have this community mindedness. You know, you wanted to join the military, and you've bought and sold several businesses, mostly kind of in computers or internet related businesses. How did you decide to create SimplyCast? Like, how did that?
So it's a bit of a long story, but
I'm also wondering, you know, with your exposure to the military, if that had any influence on what SimplyCast does.
Absolutely. So the military in general is something that every human being should consider joining. It's a great opportunity to learn about what our country, is able to do from a, support services, peacekeeping services, and so on. And Canada has a wonderful global stage. Mm-hmm. Our soldiers are working very, very hard to support even our domestic situation. The things that they teach you allow you to have tolerance, stamina, and the sleep deprivations they have to go through just to stay up. When you're doing a watch, I think those are very, very important skills to learn, because you'll need them when you're starting up a company, because usually there's not enough time in the day to get the things that you want to get done. So that built a lot of character for me, and I think it would do the same for many if they decide to join our great armed forces, regardless of which branch, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and so on. Even cadets is a great opportunity for young kids as well. But for me, I actually became a venture capitalist before I started my company. I was lucky when I was doing my MBA at St. Mary's University. I was actually sitting in the MBA lounge. Mm-hmm. And at the time, there was a newspaper called The Daily News. I don't know if you remember The Daily News. It's no longer in existence. But The Daily News had a little article that talked about an ad for an internship for 2 years. The position was only paying anywhere between $19,000 and maybe $30,000. And somebody that's graduating an MBA would expect a lot more. So I said to my peers, I said, hey, this is a wonderful opportunity of an internship for 2 years to learn about commercialization, to learn about marketing, to learn about venture capital, to learn about how you seed, business ideas and protection from a patent perspective. And I said, this is my calling, because if I can learn all this stuff in 2 years, I'd be ahead of everyone. Mm. And my friends said, Saeed, you're crazy. You could be making $40,000-$50,000 at a bank as soon as you graduate with the skills that you have, or you can be in the IT world as soon as. So I decided to apply. 174 people applied in Nova Scotia, and I was the one that was selected.
Oh, wow.
So I felt very, very, very lucky to be selected for that program. I think myself and another person were the only ones to complete that program. Mm-hmm. But what that program provided me is to actually work at Dalhousie University for 9 months at the technology innovation office. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. What that basically taught me was the opportunity of, patenting. Understanding how to protect technology from an IP perspective, trademarking, working within the various programs that exist within government to get funding, for example, for the researcher, and so on and so forth. So from there, I also learned about venture capital, where I actually worked with a venture capital firm in Nova Scotia and a few other marketing, mm-hmm. Opportunities. So I had the business skills from a young age. Then mm-hmm. I got this destiny opportunity, if you wish, mm-hmm. where I worked for 2 years in the commercialization mm-hmm. Field within, the university space. And then from there, got hired as a venture capitalist for 5 years of my life, where I was on more of the buy side. Mm-hmm. So I was listening to entrepreneurs pitching. Mm-hmm. I was reading 1,500 business plans, for example, over the 5 years to decide which business we should invest in, mm-hmm. do the analysis, do all the things that you need to do to actually be a good venture capitalist before you can select the right firm that you want to invest in. That was a wonderful opportunity, but my heart was really in the business of inventions mm. and creating technology and making an impact. And part of that process was I made a decision when I was 17 years old, when I was in the armed forces. There was a major event that happened in Nova Scotia that kind of changed my views in life, mm-hmm. Specifically and why we really need to make an impact in a technology space and in the business, rather than just focus on one thing and just make money and sell your company and move on to the next thing, because there's an opportunity to make an impact and a major impact. That was the Peggy's Cove and the Swiss Air crash that happened back in those days. And when that crash actually occurred, my sergeant at the time within the Air Forces in the Army called and said, "Hey, Saeed, we want you to call three other people." Mm-hmm. I said, "Why is the military asking me to call three or four other people?" And I realized that the armed forces didn't actually have a system back then to call out the troops for a domestic situation.
Oh, right.
Because in most cases, when you're trying to prepare for an event, you have a week or two to prepare, you're meeting with the troops and doing all the things, you're debriefing them. This actually happened at 5 o'clock in the morning, and we were called at like 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So I spent the 10 days, securing the perimeters, doing all the things. And I said, one day I'm going to be able to create a technology company that's going to be focused on communication. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that was the dream. And SimplyCast today, I'm very proud to say that SimplyCast actually does four things. And at the end of the day, they do one thing. But those four subparts are part of what we'd like to call engagement automation. So SimplyCast is one of the leading engagement automation platforms in the world. And today we also support four things for engagement. The first one is communication engagement. So if you think of your organization and you want to communicate with your employees, that is something that we support within the platform. If you are trying to do communication and marketing with your clients, we support marketing engagement. The third thing that we do is emergency mm-hmm. Engagement,
right?
Which is basically where the areas of I've learned about within the military and areas that I've seen that pretty much every government in the world mm-hmm. Would require. And finally is the communication engagement. Mm-hmm. So those four items that are required within any organization, our technology now is able to support them in those four areas. So engagement, communication, marketing, and emergency are the four areas mm-hmm. that we support any type of business. And today we have, I'm also proud that we had the Department of National Defense as a client mm-hmm. of SimplyCast. Mm-hmm. We have the Government of Nova Scotia as a client of SimplyCast. We have, CIHR, which is a major organization federally as a client, and many others. Almost every university in town is also a client of SimplyCast mm-hmm. as well, the college and many, many, many businesses. So we've been very lucky, we've been humbled, and we've been supported by our community here in Nova Scotia. And we also operate in over 175 countries as well, and in about 11 languages.
Wow. Yeah, I took a look on your website, and I was looking at all the different things that you cover, the different lines of business, as well as sectors and partners that you have. And it's pretty impressive. It's a pretty holistic approach to what
you're... platform.
Yeah, a true platform, which I want to talk about in just a second. But I was thinking about your military experience. You had this experience at Peggy's Cove, which I can't even imagine. I remember that very clearly. I remember that that accident. And then trying to find other people to just help, at the situation. And, with COVID-19, we're at that same kind of situation where, we have this global pandemic that took everyone unawares, except for probably, the people who run the models and, those kinds of things, scenarios for this kind of stuff. And Simplicast has kind of come forward with some solutions to help out with COVID-19 with tracking and tracing. Can you talk a little bit about what Simplicast has done? Because I actually didn't realize that I was using some of your things, and then I was like, wait a minute, this is Simplicast.
Exactly.
So I was pretty excited about that.
Yeah. So for the record, for the audience, if you'd like to type in the word Simplicast in your search engine and the word pandemic, you'll notice the date of that article was actually 2017.
Oh, wow.
So Simplicast was actually thinking about the potential of supporting WHO health crises across the globe. And one of my team members thought of the pandemic, and we said, okay, why don't we take a look at the standard operating procedures within a pandemic, and what would a health authority would require to do, what would a medical clinic would have to do, what would, you know, patients, if they were infected, would have to. And we went through the whole process and we said, oh my God, the technology actually does support all the standard operating procedure if a pandemic was to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Not expecting that a pandemic would hit, but when it did, within, you know, weeks, I said to my team, I said, let's bring a COVID section up on our website. And let's come up with every use case humanly possible that we can come up with to support both our government and other governments around the world to support them in COVID. As you can imagine, because our company was very much in the area of, you know, engagement, communication, marketing, and emergency, you know, we were not known as a technology company that could support health, mm-hmm. since it was not 100% focus of our company. So we went out and told everyone that we had what we had. But as you can imagine, you know, there was a lot of skepticism, right?
Mm-hmm.
A company like that actually having the technology to do these things. And eventually, you know, over time, we had requests from different governments around the world and said, are you able to do this for us? And we said, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started supporting, various use cases in the support of ensuring, you know, the safety of the public. One that is probably more prominent than I can talk about publicly would be the work that we have done with a great organization here in Nova Scotia, which is the Restaurant Association mm-hmm. of Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
They came to us and said, look, we want to support our businesses to have an easy way to allow for the public protocols to be followed without creating any undue burden on that business. And they said, do you have a technology that potentially could support?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I will show you a technology that requires no hardware, no investment by the restaurant owners, no investment by the users themselves, and no application to install on the phone. And they said, that sounds too good to be true. And I said, well, it is not. It's ready to go, and I can show it to you today, because it was mm-hmm. already built back in 2013.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And the technology, before I kind of go into the contact tracing, again, in the daily news, we launched a product back in 2013 to actually support the go time of Metro Transit.
Mm.
So rather than call in to find out when the bus is coming, you can actually text the little code on the side, and it will tell you when the bus is coming. And if Metro Transit would have, thought of supporting this concept of actually connecting to the GPS, we can actually give you a real time.
Mm-hmm.
This was 2013 that we came up with that idea. So we used the same technology in 2013 for the contact tracing when they asked us, and they were surprised. They said, you already have it? I said, absolutely. Because the use case was the same, but for a different purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of owning a platform rather than a plugin company, which we'll talk about later on.
Yeah.
We were able to launch it. Basically, they said we won the bid and the contract. I think there was three or four other companies mm-hmm. bidding on that project, and we were the lucky winners.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were up and running had almost 100,000 check-ins in the first month, which was incredible. And then we had opportunities where CBC actually started asking questions about privacy. And we were also very lucky because our company pursued our security and privacy day one when we created the organization, because we wanted to get to become an emergency company.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
that was kind of the beauty, because if you know what you want to be when you grow up,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
then you're going to be preparing for it every single day rather than let's pivot. And the company has never pivoted
mm-hmm.
since we started. The business plan that we wrote back in 2010
mm-hmm.
is the same business plan that we have today.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I think, what you've done with the Restaurant Association, just being a local myself, really appreciate that.
Thank you.
The contact tracing has made a big difference, I think, you know, in trying to get the province back on track. So kudos to
you
and your team for thinking about these things way, way back in the day and then coming to the table to apply them. Well, one thing we touched on a little bit, and you kind of mentioned it just a moment ago, was this idea of a platform company. So Maybe why don't you tell us what a platform company is? Maybe some people who are listening may not have heard that term before, sure, or may not know what it is, and why SimplyCast is a platform company. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I think the platform company that everybody knows in the world is Microsoft. So Microsoft and Bill Gates created a true platform company because it is an operating system that is the base of every technology and software that can be built on top of it. That is the definition of a platform. From a SimplyCast perspective, our platform allows you to build endless use cases. Mm-hmm. And that gives us the opportunity that we can be in any market, in any space, and be able to basically support any use case that is presented to us in a way that requires no programming whatsoever. And that was kind of the vision of SimplyCast when we started, is that we want it to be the no-code, low-code platform in the world that supports engagement, regardless of what it is, mm-hmm, in the four areas that we want to focus on, which is communication, engagement, marketing, and emergency. And that is what supported us in creating that concept of a platform. I personally believe, and this is what something that I've learned and kind of, you know, it was a light bulb when, mm-hmm, we were looking at businesses, both in the venture capital perspective and, you know, in the general business perspective, that when somebody pitched me a business, the first thing I would think of, is this a plug-in company, mm-hmm, or is this a platform company? And what do I mean by a plug-in company? A plug-in company is a company that does one thing. It can go deep in that one thing and it could do it very, very well. But that is the only purpose for that company. There's nothing wrong with starting a platform company and there's nothing wrong with starting a plug-in company. However, the amount of investment in dollars that you had to put into a platform company, if you think of Microsoft, if you think of Google, if you think of Amazon, AWS. AWS is a true platform that allows you to build multiple services on top of it. But the cost of starting up a platform company, it has been said within TechCrunch, VentureBeat, and all the major you know, publications out there, you require at a minimum $100 million to start. Mm-hmm. And this is day one, right? To start a company like that. And eventually it would cost up to $1 billion to sustain it to get to that point. That is very difficult to do outside of the North, outside of the U.S. and Silicon Valley specifically, and that's why we see a lot of plug-in companies in Canada. Mm-hmm. And those plug-in companies are usually very, very good. You know, have a return on investment for investors because they have a shorter time span. Mm-hmm. They can be invested within 2 to 5 years, and within the 7-year period, they could be acquired. Good IRR for the investors, good return on investment for the angels, and it supports the ecosystem. However, a platform company usually takes 15 to 20 years to get to the point where you could actually see, because it requires a lot of investment, a lot of technological innovation, mm-hmm, just the layers of that technology. So, you know, I'd love to see a lot more platform companies, but we don't have the money to invest in those type of companies. And you would have to do it in a similar way where you will miss a lot of, you know, windows of opportunities, because if you can't invest that large dollars, other companies will eventually eat away at the window of opportunity and will, you know, will cause you to rethink your strategy, mm-hmm, every once in a while, which is part of being an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. So SimplyCast as a platform company, are there companies that you work with that would be plugging into SimplyCast, or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So SimplyCast is a bit of a different beast. Mm-hmm. And the reason why, so SimplyCast actually owns 26 products. And each one of those products is a plugin. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, our vision, and I don't mind revealing this publicly, our vision is to actually have 100 products on the platform, mm-hmm, and eventually allow others to build. Mm-hmm. However, what we have found just in the last 5 years is that SimplyCast today has probably close to 400 use cases on the platform. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we see no limit to the, mm-hmm, use cases now. And they're coming to us so fast that it's just becoming a very interesting that the vision of SimplyCast back in 2010 is actually materializing in ways that I never thought.
Interesting.
Which is wonderful, and just kind of speaks to the wonderful team that we have at SimplyCast and the way that they believe that this was going to be the field of dreams. If we can build it, they will come, and they started to come. And as you have seen, the contract tracing is one, and there's others that you'll be hearing about shortly as well in the coming, you know, weeks and months.
Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing about that. I will stay tuned for the, absolutely, things that are on the horizon. And one thing we've talked about a little bit before, and you kind of touched on it a bit here, was you were talking about your team, and I know that you're particularly interested in supporting youth unemployment,
yes,
and talent development. Can you know your and SimplyCast has grown to this size and success and stage of development, partially because of your leadership, but also partially because of the people that you bring on board. And you know, we're here talking about entrepreneurship and you know what happens with companies. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of developing talent for a business in general, and maybe more specifically related to a tech-based business? Yeah.
So I've made in early days when I was at St. Mary's University doing my undergraduate degree in computer science, business administration, HR, and economics, I decided that
that's a lot of things, by the way. That's a lot of things.
And I decided that. I should be considering doing a co-op on top of it. So I started applying, but because I had a lot of entrepreneurship experience, but didn't have specific skills in an area like, finance or accounting from a school perspective, because it was only my first year, a lot of the positions that I applied for basically said you didn't have the experience that we're looking for. So I decided back then that when I grew up, I will consider having a life mission that I will never change. Mm-hmm. And that life mission has been since then is to end youth unemployment. Mm-hmm. My work within the One Nova Scotia Coalition, the work with pretty much all the organizations that support youth in our province has been something that I have taken as a personal objective. Mm-hmm. Every day I work in my company. I support, the objectives of the organization, but before I go to bed every night, mm-hmm. I will ask myself, what did I do for our Canadian youth? Mm-hmm. And if I didn't think of a way to support them or a different way to, talk about them in the various meetings that I have and so on, I just would not feel, satisfied at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So recently I've been asked by the federal government to sit in on the National Research Council Board. Mm-hmm. The first meeting I had, the first thing I said, is there a youth strategy that's in place? And I was very happy to see that NRC had a youth strategy in place. And I said, well, how could we improve it? And they said, oh my God, this guy's going to push really hard on youth. The first thing I did when I joined the One Nova Scotia Coalition, what are we doing for youth, right? Same thing when I go into my company, what are we doing for youth? Mm-hmm. If I'm on a podcast, I talk about youth as much as possible. And there's multiple reasons, but my selfish reason for doing that is I have 5 kids at home.
Yeah.
And if I take care of my own kids, that means I'm taking care of every Canadian family's kids out there. And if I can increase the opportunity for kids and youth and future adults of our nation to have the experience that they need, which means that they're going to produce more, and our productivity nationwide mm-hmm. will increase. So I see it as a lifelong mission that I will probably be engraved in my gravestone. Mm-hmm. That his life mission was to end youth unemployment, which is never going to happen, which means that I will always be doing it.
Well, we need people out there to be supporting the youth. I've got 3 at home that I am responsible for as well. Right. 2 were going into high school. So I'm, looking forward to having them find opportunities, absolutely. Find what they love, find jobs and careers and, ways to get engaged in the world around them. So we need more people pushing for the youth.
Well, you can count on me pushing.
and in Nova Scotia, it's especially important as we think about entrepreneurship. Absolutely. And some of those skills that come. Hopefully we can get more kids that have that sense of hustle that I would say that you exhibited when you were, 8, 11, 16, 17 years old. Because it starts really early and it makes a huge difference. Absolutely. To, someone's opportunities and life trajectory.
And so. you'll be happy to know that I was a junior achiever when I was in grade 9.
Oh.
Right, so that's another program that everybody should join.
Okay. So. Yes. Plug for junior achievement. They do wonderful things. Yep. But OnSide, we're very supportive of the work. Absolutely. That they do there as well. So I think before COVID, I was lucky enough to be a judge on one of their events that they had, and I have to say I was really impressed with the students. I mean, they're just absolutely. So full of energy. We talked a little bit about SimplyCast and your platform company, your experience, growing up here in the Army, so many interesting things. And your company has grown in Nova Scotia. I've heard you talk about the things that have supported you here in Nova Scotia. And, I'd like to hear a little bit about, why do you keep your company here in Nova Scotia? Like, what's going on here that's working for you? Like, why Nova Scotia? A lot of people might be thinking, why not Silicon Valley? You know, you had mentioned about that. You were in venture capital. You know, it's very attractive. It's warm, you know.
And I've actually went there multiple times and stayed there for, you know, continuously for almost 3 weeks. It's always been my dream to actually go to Silicon Valley. I received an offer when I was in my first year of university. Mm-hmm. And the dollars were crazy. Mm-hmm. And I showed it to my mother and I said, I'm now quitting university and I'm going to go to Silicon Valley. She says, why do you always come back and say about quitting school, right? And I said, well, because the opportunities are wonderful over there. Like, and I had my offer, I think it was in 1999, just before the dot-com crash. Mm-hmm. And they were after us, right? Like anyone that knew anything and had even a website on the internet with a strong resume of programming. And my mother said, look, there's one thing that I will tell you, and if you could do it, you will be successful the rest of your life. And I said, Mom, what is that? And that is the story that kind of started why I stayed in Nova Scotia, but there's a lot more reasons, which I'll talk about. She said, the strongest tree and the tallest tree is the one that has the deepest roots. Mm-hmm. And I said, and I started thinking, I said, what do you mean, Mom? Right? Like, what do you mean by deepest roots? She says, the more connections and the more that you can, you know, plant in a community, the more support and the more success that you'll have. Mm-hmm. And she said, most people will go after the money. They'll go after the high rises and the lifestyle and so on. But what you truly want to do is go after the deep roots. Because once you establish them, you can do anything. Mm-hmm. And people always want to come home. Mm-hmm. No matter where they go, they always want to come home. Mm-hmm. She says, let them go away, do their thing. But if you can do the deep roots here, and for her, she wanted me to stay next
door.
She's
your mom. She's your mom. Let's be real. Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
And I said, you know what? She has more experience than I do. I'm going to listen. And almost everything she said was 100% right. Mm-hmm. And, deep roots, connections, family, support. I couldn't have developed any of the companies without having the family and support and community that I have here. The amount of friends that I wish I can hang around with in Nova Scotia, but I just don't have the opportunity at the time because of the five kids and my family. It's just, you know, I can call anybody in this province and ask for their help and they would give it. And without anything in return. And that's the beauty of this community is they will support you. The deeper roots that you have, the better. But why should everybody in the world come to Nova Scotia? Mm-hmm. That's the big question. Mm-hmm. We have 11 post-secondary educational institutions in this province. A little plug, a disclosure. I sit on the EduNova board, which represents all the universities and colleges and the private schools, language schools in the province. So any company requires the one major thing to actually survive. And people always think it's capital, and it's not, right? One of the most important things that every company needs is human resources.
Yep.
You can get capital from anywhere. You can actually get it from China. You can get it from Japan. You can get it from the U.S. Talent, you need to go where the talent is because they have to make the choice of where they want to live.
Yeah.
You know, we have the ocean. We have a wonderful opportunity here. We don't have the traffic that Toronto has and, you know, Calgary and so on. And the universities are graduating great minds. Mm-hmm. You know, Dallas University is one of the greatest universities in our country. And it's graduating a lot of, you know, talent in finance, in computer science, you name it, right? Same thing with St. Mary's, Acadia, and all the other universities out there. So I said to myself, I can go anywhere, but the talent is right here, and I should be able to recruit from it. And it also serves my ending youth unemployment purpose. So that was number one. Number two, Halifax is pretty much across the pond from the UK, time zone to Boston, New York, and all the major establishments. And we have a trade agreement with the US that I can literally walk over to the US back in the day without a passport, right? Now we need a little bit of passport because of all the situations that's happening out there. But still, when I walk through the border, I have never been stopped ever in the history, you know, of me doing any international travel. And that is because you have a Canadian passport. And the U.S. sees Canada as an ally, which means that we can ship our product to the biggest market in the world. So where do you want to be? You want to be in a place that supports you. The government is second to none, both in Nova Scotia and federally. Right? Mm-hmm. They're always looking at opportunities to support. The SHRED program is a huge, key program that's available to early startups when they're coming in. NRC, which I'm also on the board of, but, you know, programs like that, ACOA, I mean, I don't think we have a program like Ecoa anywhere in Canada the way that they support. NSBI is doing a huge support, both for trade missions supporting. So I can just keep going, and there's like seed organizations. Seed is a great organization as well. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to that we have a favorable economic conditions. That we can support businesses, that it's not going to break the bank for you to start a business. Even this current government that we have is looking at removing red tape. Right. So the more red tape that you remove, the more it's easier for business. I think our taxes continue to be high, but that's something that we have to work on, regardless of what jurisdiction that you're in. But that's, Nova Scotia is probably one of the best and most progressive. And we have OnSide here as well, which is also working. I mean, Cove, the ocean, you name it. So I think there's a lot of good planning that's happening both provincially and federally to start the process. But I think we need to differentiate ourselves because everybody's be doing the same thing right now. And that kind of bothers me a little bit. If you look at every region, they're all trying to bring startups.
Yeah.
If you look at every region, they're always trying to start funds to invest. If you look at every region, they're always... So we need to find that unique. And I think the federal government did a good job with the oceans, and that's something that we need to grow. But we need to find our calling, right? Like Montreal AI, if you look at, Boston, it's biotech. So we need Nova Scotia to be on the world stage with that one or two things that we can do well and double down on them.
Yeah, interesting. I've been thinking about that quite a lot, so I might come back to you about that, because I think there's a growing sentiment out there of people recognizing that we have a really unique comparative advantage here, and people are trying to think about how to position that and how to share with the world what that is in a way that that really resonates. So I'm definitely kind of interested in that. So I have a couple of questions that we usually ask our podcast guests. Sure. They're kind of sort of standard fare. And one of them is really, what is innovation-driven entrepreneurship? Like what we, and every guest that we have has a very different answer about what it is. And, at OnSide, we're working here in Nova Scotia to foster innovation-driven entrepreneurship. There's all different kinds. And, we want to get a sense from people, like, what does that mean to you?
Right. It's one word, impact. Can you make an impact? Because innovation is about impact. So innovation and research, it's finding that next vaccine, and look at the innovation that has happened around the world because of the pandemic. We needed something. The world came together, but we had a short timeline, and, a good percentage of the population in Canada now is vaccinated. If you would have ever thought that a vaccine could come out in less than 2 years, 10 years ago, people would laugh at you, right? So innovation is about impact. And I think what truly makes anything happen is the person or the organization or the team truly believes in the impact. And this is what I ask my team every day. Do you believe in the impact that we're making as an organization? And if you don't, please leave. I say that to my team. I said, look, there's hundreds of people that would probably believe in this impact. But if you don't, chances are you're not going to put in your 100%. So I believe innovation has to create impact. Impact creates wealth, and wealth creates prosperity. So if you were to think about making an impact, you shouldn't be thinking about wealth right away. Because if you're thinking about wealth, unless you already know that this thing is going to be the only thing in the world that, it's a vaccine and Pfizer is going to be the one to buy it, then, you already created prosperity, wealth, and impact. But 99% of the population has to think impact.
Yeah.
And the biggest reason why, when you truly believe in impact, you will not give up. But if you're thinking about wealth, prosperity, if it doesn't work out in the first 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 3 years, they'll probably walk away from it. But if you truly believe in the impact that you're going to make and you're tied to it because personal reasons, family reasons, a person passed away due to cancer and you are a cancer researcher, you're probably going to be thinking about that person for the rest of your life, and you're trying to make an impact so that person's story doesn't happen again. And I think that is true to the word innovation. The other thing that that probably is not very popular when I talk about is that entrepreneurship is just the word business. When Adam and Eve arrived on Earth, right? They probably started a business. When the population grew, somebody started a business. Entrepreneur is just a sexy word that we use, but you're still in business. You're a business owner. Right. The only difference between a business owner and an entrepreneur, if you want to differentiate them, is that they probably, or sorry, an innovator mm-hmm. is somebody that wants to innovate on something that will make an impact that probably didn't exist before. Mm. Where a business owner is in the business of providing a service or a product that is in need for the market, and hopefully you'll innovate a little bit on it, but that was not the goal that you went into that business.
Yeah.
Is you're trying to support your family and make money.
Yeah. You mentioned a little bit about some of the benefits that come about from being innovative. And at OnSide, we've been focused around inclusion as well, inclusive innovation-driven entrepreneurship. And that's definitely a conversation that's been coming forward a lot more in the last year to the everyday person. I think probably for a certain group of people, that was a conversation before, but now it's in everyone's face, whether it's related to women or Black identified people, indigenous. Immigrants, indigenous folks. Where do you think this is going with regards to innovation and entrepreneurship? How do we include more people to get the benefits from innovation and entrepreneurship?
So I think inclusivity EDI is something that we actually been talking about. Now we're just terming it.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past, we used to hear about the glass ceiling. We used to hear about the inequality of pay, across the different genders. And, back in the day, back in the 40s, the 30s, the early 1900s, we used to think of slavery.
Right?
Mm. So every single day, there's always an EDI problem that's happening since, again, Adam and Eve went on Earth, right? From an innovation perspective, I think what is happening from an ecosystem perspective across the globe is that we are now seeing that our society is catching up to our population diversity, right? Where if you looked in South Africa, for example, there was segregation, even communities where 100% were white and, the majority were Black in the poorer sections of South Africa, for example. So this is happening around the world. But I think from an ecosystem perspective, the governments and the world has woken up and says, we truly, to have peace around the world, we need to live in peace ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to start to change our communities from within rather than look at other countries first. So I think that's what's happening to Canada, both from the Indigenous file, for the African Nova Scotia, or the Canadian, African Canadians across mm-hmm. The nation, immigrants that are coming here, regardless of what religion and so on. So I think, over time, we're going to be seeing normalization of understanding that everybody's the same on the inside, right? Like we're just human beings trying to live, and we're trying to come to this great land so we can, support prosperity and economic growth. But at the end of the day, innovation is what will be driven because of diversity. And I think that's kind of the message that a lot of people don't kind of tie together. The more diverse the community is, the more innovation that will actually come out of it, because the individuals that are coming to this land, right, regardless if they're migrating from New Brunswick to Halifax, but they're here because they have a purpose and they have a reason why they migrated from one province to another, from one country to another. And when they get here, they have a lot more passion and energy that they want to get to that impact that they want to do. And that's what drives innovation, right? Because if you're trying to find a job and you don't know what job you're going to work, you're going to create your own job. When they create their own job, let's say a coffee shop, they're going to have to hire local people, which means that you've just grown the pie rather than stole a piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of people think that, in a democratic society like in Canada and in an area where capitalism is flourishing, you are always growing the pie. You're not taking away from the pie. And I think that's one thing that, Nova Scotia, we have to stop thinking about we're a not half province.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to grow. Mm-hmm. We're here to make impact, and we're here to grow the pie.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people that can grow businesses here, the more people will get attracted here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the pandemic woke up a lot of people around the world to say, Nova Scotia is the place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
here we are. And they're moving here, even though they can work in another region, but they want to live because this is a really, 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 really good place to live and play and grow a family.
Well, you raise a really good point, because you can certainly enjoy your apple pie sitting by the ocean or by a lake or, on a boat. So I think as we're growing our pie, we do have a great locale here for people to join us.
Absolutely.
Last question that I have for you. This is another question that we usually ask our guests. Entrepreneurship, nurture or nature? Do you think?
Nurture.
Nurture. Okay. Absolutely. Why is that?
Because I think if the person has the impact, then you need people to nurture them to get them there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like that. I like that. Well, I think that we had a great session today. I bombarded you with a few questions. Thank you so much for spending time with me today and sharing about your journey here and your experience with your family coming here, your early experiences creating a business, all of the encouragement that your family gave you, some wise sage advice from your mother, and for, you know, sticking with Nova Scotia and really working with everyone here to grow your business here locally, employ youth, and all of the volunteer work that you're doing as well. You touched on that quite a bit, and it's really great to see that and to know that you're pushing in many different directions. For people who want to know more about SimplyCast, what's the best way to connect with you or learn more about your company?
You can add me on LinkedIn, you can add me on Facebook, or you can just reach out to our team at SimplyCast.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you so much for joining us today. And for our listeners that are out there, thanks for tuning into the Onside Podcast. We hope that you will stay tuned for future episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Onside Now or check us out on our website. And can't wait for you to join next time.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.